We're back with Marco on Astro Talk on CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome. This is Marco, and you're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Great weather, and now the sun is approaching its farthest distance from the Earth. So what happens in summer? The sun is far away from the Earth, and winter comes closer. So
yonder white mare weather, who found the hole?
Not related to how close the sun is to us.
Yonder white mare weather, who found the tilt of the Earth's axis.
So anyway, what's happening in astronomy these days? Something cool. It is the 100th anniversary of President John F. Kennedy's birth. And although Kennedy didn't create NASA or form NASA, he was the one that said, let's go to the moon. And NASA was formed by his predecessor, Dwight D. Eisenhower. But when Kennedy stepped up to his podium and said, we will land the moon within a certain time, it got everybody going. And first, they had a lot of problems, but they were designing a lot of things like rockets. I'll talk a little bit about that. It was a difficult process. It wasn't as easy as you and I might think. And we know rocket science is not easy. So 100 years since John F. Kennedy was born. He would have been 100 if he was still alive. So let's talk a little about those heady days when the Americans said, let's go to the moon. There was a problem with that in the beginning because they had to build rockets. And then they finally discovered, well, the rocket's got to be in three stages. So they designed three different stages. But in one of the stages, the way the fuel entered the rocket, the way it mixed and the turbulence inside there, it was explosive. It made the rocket blow up. So all brand new technology had to be invented. There was a lot of work done, but they got it going. So this was all driven by President John F. Kennedy, but all the science and engineers did it. So I'm on a page that says President John F. Kennedy. I'm clicking it, and it's not doing anything. So it looks like I cannot talk about John F. Kennedy because I went to this link, and it says President John F. Kennedy, but it just has a smiling face, a couple of words. Oh, there it is. I found an arrow. Let's see what it says. Okay, so Kennedy's attitude towards the space program was complex. He entered the White House thinking space could be an area for tension-reducing cooperation with the Soviet Union. And he never gave that up, or gave that hope up, until June 3rd to 4th, 1961, a summit meeting in Vienna with Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev. Kennedy said to him, why don't we do it together? Let's go to space together. But the Russians went on alone, and they started sending men into space. So there was a challenge for the Americans. So Kennedy said, on May 25th, 1961, he said, Kennedy addressed a joint session of Congress to announce his decision to go to the moon. NASA's budget was then increased by 89% and another 101% the following year. To carry out Apollo, NASA began the large engineering organization centered on developing capabilities for human spaceflight that it is today. So, 100 years since Kennedy started or was born. So, he's the one that said, let's go to the moon. Okay, so I had something about New Horizons as you astronomers might know. New Horizons flew by Jupiter last year or the year before. It didn't stop. It just flew by. They pointed the cameras and they had a lot of data on it. And it's on its way to its next flyby target. But there's so many stories here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to concentrate at the beginning of the show on something called a whole new Jupiter. Now, this is the Juno mission, J-U-N-O. It is now in the Jupiter system, orbiting around, and it is doing flybys and orbits of Jupiter, and it's got a long elliptical orbit. So right now, it's on the part of the orbit which is bringing it the closest to Jupiter. Now, it shows an image of Jupiter at the South Pole, as seen by NASA's Juno spacecraft, from an altitude of 32,000 miles or 52,000 kilometers. The oval features are cyclones. up to 600 miles in diameter. Imagine a cyclone 600 miles in diameter. Multiple images taken with the JunoCam instrument on three separate orbits were combined to show all areas in daylight, enhanced in color, and stereographic projection. So this is on the NASA website, www.nasa.gov. The release of the article is May 25th, 2017, and the title of the article says, A Whole New Jupiter, First Science Results from NASA's Juno Mission. Okay, I'm going to read the article. Early science results from NASA's Juno mission to Jupiter portray the largest planet in our solar system as a complex, gigantic, turbulent world, with Earth-sized polar cyclones, plunging storm systems that travel deep into the heart of the gas giant, and a mammoth, lumpy magnetic field that may indicate it was generated closer to the planet's surface than previously thought. So says Diane Brown, Juno's program executive at NASA headquarters in Washington, and quote, we are excited to share these early discoveries, which help us better understand what makes Jupiter so fascinating. It was a long trip to get to Jupiter, but these first results already demonstrate it was well worth the journey, end quote. Juno launched on August 5th, 2011, so it took about 5.5 years to get to Jupiter, entering Jupiter's orbit on July 4th, 2016. Sorry, it took 5 years to get to Jupiter. The findings from the first data collection pass, which flew within about 26,000 miles of Jupiter's swirling cloud tops on August 27, are being published this week in two papers in the journal Science, as well as 44 papers in Geophysical Research Letters. Now, as I said to the listeners before, I have tried to access this journal called Geophysical Research Letters, and I don't know what I'm doing wrong, but I can't get in. So I always want to research topics, but they say, okay, sign up and then do this and then join us here and then do this and do that. And by the time you're through with it, you've committed so many errors and you can't get in. So I'll try again one day. But the weather's nice, so I might not do it this weekend. So here's another quote from Scott Bolton, Juno principal investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio. And one thing I do like about NASA, for example, they just made a statement from Washington. And now there's another guy named Scott Bolton, a Juno principal investigator in San Antonio. All these projects are shared around the United States. So many different universities are doing work in cooperation with NASA, which is so good. And I think part of the reason for this is when we have space missions like this Juno or the Cassini mission in Saturn, there's a competition for who gets to have their experiment done on this mission. So there's a lot of proposals from all different universities. And NASA, being the big octopus it is with its eight arms or a lot of arms, it reaches in so many different places. And all these universities get to submit their proposals. So we have all kinds of universities in America doing so much astronomy research, which is great. I wish we could do that in Canada. But our government doesn't fund it like America funds theirs. So I'm going to read this now from Scott Bolton, Juno principal investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, and quote, we knew going in that Jupiter would throw us some curves. But now that we are here, we are finding that Jupiter can throw the heat as well as knuckleballs and sliders. There's so much going on here that we didn't expect, that we have had to step back and begin to rethink of this as a whole new Jupiter. So we're in what we say is a modern age. We have all this high technology, and there's so much, though, we still don't know. Now, we know a lot about Jupiter, but now sending this spacecraft Juno, they're just discovering so much more and more, which is what science is all about, discovery, isn't it? Okay, so that's good that a lot of their programs or a lot of their experiments were done years before, and they're put on the spacecraft. And all of a sudden, when they get there, they find the conditions are different than what they thought, even though they've been there before. So these missions are well worth it. Now I'm going to continue with the article. Among the findings that challenge assumptions are those provided by Juno's imager, JunoCam. The images show both of Jupiter's poles are covered in Earth-sized swirling storms that are densely clustered and rubbing together. So says Bolton, this professor, Scott Bolton, he's a principal investigator from the Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, and quote again, "We're puzzled as to how they could be formed, these swirling clouds, that is, how stable the configuration is, and why Jupiter's north pole doesn't look like the south pole. We're questioning whether this is a dynamic system, and are we seeing just one stage, and over the next year we're going to watch it disappear, or is this a stable configuration and these storms are circulating around one another?" So this raises an interesting point. We think we know a lot, but then in our next flight, our next mission, all that we thought we knew, it's challenged. And one of the things that I've been thinking about a lot lately, I'm going to digress from this article, is this 11-year solar cycle. So apparently, because of the differential rotation in the sun, for example, the poles in the equator rotate at different periods. So the equators rotate slower than the poles. So all these magnetic fields get twisted up inside. And because of this, we have these solar storms that come around in 11-year cycles. Now, I recall hearing something or watching something on TV 300 or 400 years ago in Europe, London to be specific, its river flows over. Now, the reason scientists are saying that, there could be a more complex solar storm at our solar cycle here. We are used to dealing with 11-year solar cycles, but there could be 300, 400, 500-year solar cycles. So what we could be going through eventually in 50 years, 100 years, 2 years, is another solar cycle where it becomes very cold on Earth, and we are no longer in global warming, but global icing. So a lot of these assumptions that astronomers make, because we work on such short time scales, which is the human time scale, we have all this new technology that even we didn't think we'd have 20 years ago, never mind 300, 400 years ago. And all these things, like, for example, Andromeda galaxy is heading towards us. It could hit us in about a couple of billion years. Now, in those time scales, humans don't work in billions of years. We live 70, 80 years and 90 years. We are working in an environment where, in astronomy, that's just a mere blink of an eye in many situations. So now here we have these astronomers in Jupiter with their Juno space cam, and it's finding something that scientists didn't think would be there, which is these these cyclones at the poles. And they're saying the North Pole apparently is different than the South Pole. So these missions are well worth it because we're finding out more and more. Okay, now I'm going to continue back to the article. And I'm going to repeat what I said a couple minutes ago just so we can get back on track. Among the findings that challenge assumptions are those provided by Juno's imager, Juno Cam. The images show both of Jupiter's poles are covered in Earth-sized swirling storms that are densely clustered and rubbing together. Imagine Earth-sized swirling storms. That's quite amazing. And I'm going to repeat the quote of this investigator, Scott Bolton, and quote, "We're puzzled as to how they could be formed, the storms that is, how stable the configuration is, and why Jupiter's north pole doesn't look like the south pole. We're questioning whether this is a dynamic system, and are we seeing just one stage? Over the next year, are we going to watch it disappear, or is this a stable configuration and these storms are circulating around one another?" So we might find out this in a few years, and it might take another 100 years or 200 years to discover another solar cycle. So again, we're examining these things in a blink of an eye time frame, because a lot of these processes go over millions or billions of years. So back to the article. Another surprise comes from Juno's microwave radiometer, MWR, which samples the thermal microwave radiation from Jupiter's atmosphere. Imagine that, samples the thermal microwave radiation from Jupiter's atmosphere. That's interesting. How does it do that? Does a little bot like BB-8, does it go out and stick its arm out and go, "Yummy, this is microwave radiation"? Okay. Now, it samples the thermal microwave radiation from Jupiter's atmosphere, from the top of the ammonia clouds to deep within its atmosphere. The MWR data indicates that Jupiter's iconic belts and zones are mysterious, with the belt near the equator penetrating all the way down, while the belts and zones at other latitudes seem to evolve to other structures. The data suggests ammonia is quite variable and continues to increase as far down as we can see with MWR, which is a few hundred kilometers. Okay, now, what am I going to do now? Let's see. Why not go to a break? So after the break, I'm going to come back and talk more about this monster called Jupiter. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I sh**.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electro-pop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds big, and we're making it like hell. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Come back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. Back to the article. We're talking about the Juno mission. It's in Jupiter. It's doing some new science, and it's amazing scientists because they're finding Earth-side cyclone storms in the on the north and south poles of the planet Jupiter. Now, I recall how some of the storms in some other planets, there's like... We had a windstorm the other day, I think 98 kilometers an hour. Well, some of these storms are 1,500 kilometers an hour, so that would really kick us around, wouldn't it? So anyway, back to the article. Prior to the Juno mission, it was known that Jupiter had the most intense magnetic field in the solar system. Measurements of the massive planet's magnetosphere from Jupiter's magnetometer investigation, nicknamed, with the acronym MAG or MAG, indicate that Jupiter's magnetic field is even stronger than models expected and more irregular in shape. MAG data indicates that the magnetic field greatly exceeded expectations at 7,766 Gauss. I just bumped my knee. I shouldn't do that. Oh, that hurt. Okay. I'll read that again. MAG data indicates the magnetic field greatly exceeded expectations at 7,766 Gauss, or 7.766 Gauss, about 10 times stronger than the strongest magnetic field on Earth. And I just bumped my knee at a rate that's 10 times stronger than that. Okay, so now, so says Jack Connery, Juno Deputy Principal Investigator and the lead for the mission's magnetic field investigation at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland. And quote, Juno has given us a view of the magnetic field close to Jupiter that we've never had before. Already, we see that the magnetic field looks lumpy. How can a magnetic field look lumpy? It is stronger in some places and weaker in others. This uneven distribution suggests that the field might be generated by dynamo action closer to the surface above the layer of metallic hydrogen. So remember, Jupiter and Saturn have metallic hydrogen in their clouds. Isn't that interesting? Every flyby we execute gets us closer to determining where and how Jupiter's dynamo works. So what's a dynamo? Okay, well, here's a dynamo. Let's take the Earth as an example. You have an iron core in the center of the Earth. And what happens? There are ions floating or circulating around the iron core. So it's a lava, it's a magma, but it's a moving charge. So you have ions moving, which equates to a moving charge. And we know that in a circuit, electric circuit, when we have a moving charge, like we can put a magnet close to a wire in a circuit, and the magnet will go crazy. The compass will go crazy. And if you put iron filings around, they line up in the field lines typical of a magnetic field. So this is a dynamo, or this is one part of the dynamo. So what we have is we have a moving charge inside the Earth, which is the lava that circulates around the core. That's a moving charge that creates a magnetic field, which envelops our Earth. And what happens is this magnetic field, which is changing, then reinforces the flow of the charges inside the Earth. So that's called a dynamo. One thing reinforces the other. So the moving charges or the plasma or the, no, not, sorry, not the plasma, the magma, the lava, creates a magnetic field. This magnetic field then reinforces the charge inside the Earth. And it affects the charge of the Earth, makes it go faster, are more intense, and then that in effect re-intensifies the magnetic field around the Earth. So that's a dynamo. One thing reinforces the other, which turns back and reinforces the first thing, and then this first thing reinforces again the magnetic field. So that's called a dynamo, where one thing reinforces the other. So we have we have electric current or electric flow below the surface of our Earth, creating a magnetic field around the Earth, and this magnetic field reinforces the flow of the ions in below the Earth's surface, which in turn reinforces the strength of the magnetic field, and so on and so on and so on. So that's called a dynamo. So Juno is also, where was I? I lost my place. Okay. Juno has given us a view of the magnetic field close to Jupiter that we never had before. Already we see that the magnetic field looks lumpy. It is stronger in some places and weak in others. This uneven distribution suggests that the field might be generated by dynamo action closer to the surface above the layer of metallic hydrogen. Every flyby we execute gets us closer to determining where and how Jupiter's dynamo works. So again, Jupiter is kind of complicated, but everything's complicated in our solar system. Our Earth's thing is complicated. We have all these lava flowing below the surface, which creates our magnetosphere, which creates the magnetic field around Earth. So Jupiter's is more complex. They have, I believe, a solid core in Jupiter, but there's all kind of ionic flows outside that core, and the metallic hydrogen seems to contribute to their dynamo. And so that's why scientists are saying it gets us, every flyby we execute gets us closer to determining where and how Jupiter's dynamo works, end quote. Juno is also designed to study the polar magnetosphere and the origin of Jupiter's powerful auroras, its northern and southern lights. These auroral emissions are caused by particles that pick up energy, slamming into atmospheric molecules. Juno's initial observations indicate that the process seems to work differently at Jupiter than on Earth. This is all cool stuff. Juno is in a polar orbit around Jupiter, and the majority of each orbit is spent well away from the gas giant. But once every 53 days, its trajectory approaches Jupiter from above its north pole, where it begins a two-hour transit from pole to pole, flying north to south with its eight science instruments collecting data and its JunoCam public outreach camera snapping pictures. Isn't that cool? A Juno public outreach camera. The download of 6 megabytes of data collected during the transit can take 1.5 days. I would love to be operating that camera. That would be so cool. And so says Scott Bolton again, the principal investigator, the Southwest Research Institute, and quote, every 53 days we go screaming by Jupiter, get doused by a fire hose of Jovian science, and there is always something new. On our next flyby on June 11th, which I'll keep in mind, we will fly directly over one of the most ionic features in the entire solar system, one that every school kid knows, Jupiter's Great Red Spot. If anybody is going to get to the bottom of what is going on below those mammoth swirling crimson cloud, it's Juno and her cloud-piercing science instruments. Okay, so just NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, manages the Juno mission for NASA. So more information on the Juno mission is available at www.nasa.gov/Juno, that's J-U-N-O, or http://missionjuno.org. So today we learned more about our solar system and about this fascinating place called Jupiter. So the Juno mission is one mission that is taking over while the Cassini mission in Saturn is winding down. So thank you for listening. Hopefully I tried to get in touch with Trina Ray of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, but they're in their final mission stage of getting the Cassini spacecraft to crash land or smash into Saturn's atmosphere. So hopefully I can get her one day. And I don't know if listeners recall, I had her on last week and she was a treasure trove of information. And she also worked on my favorite, which is the Voyager missions years ago. Okay, thank you for listening. This has been Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.